This is the Yada Yada Podcast, where we get to the heart of the Christian sexual ethic with biblical truths and real talk about sex, purity, and relationships. We're your hosts, Ashley
and Amber
from Across My Heart Ministries.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 6 of season 2. Today we're going to be talking about the LGB of the LGBTQIA. We're going to be looking at four different sides, or I should really say four different views that Christians take on issues related to same-sex attraction and kind of be really dialoguing about those views, and maybe you'll resonate with one more than the other or find that you're kind of a mix of a few of them. And we're going to be answering some specific questions in relation to these views, like, is same-sex intercourse blessed by God? Is same-sex union considered marriage? Can I call myself gay if I experience same-sex attraction? So, you know, some of the hard hitters and some of the more nuanced questions.
Yeah, and kind of explaining where the different views fall and also where we as a ministry align ourselves. And I like how you called it the four different views. They actually are referred to as the four sides, which I don't really understand why they say sides, because it's like, whose side are you on?
Yeah,
you
know? It sounds a little more...
It sounds aggressive. Like, calm down.
Tribal.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually like the four views better, but it is referred to as the four sides. And there's actually a podcast called the Side B Podcast that has a great resource on this if you want to read more about what we're discussing today. But real quick, I want to overview what the four positions, the four views, the four sides are as we're discussing today. There are four sides that fall within the Christian tradition. So that means if you were to pick up a book at the bookstore written about the topic of homosexuality, the author could be writing from any one of these four perspectives. So this is something to keep in mind when you just pick up a book, you don't know, you know, where the author's coming from. They're going to fit into one of these four categories. So the four sides are side A, side B, side Y, and side X. And side A is really the only side that we would refer to as affirming, meaning these authors are saying, you know, it's okay to be gay and it's okay to live out homosexual desires. Like, homosexual sex is blessed by God. He made you queer. Love is love. All of that. The proponents of this would be Justin Lee, Jim Brownson. He's actually a professor at Western Theological Seminary right here in Michigan, Helen, Michigan. But I think what would surprise people most about this view is if you were to pick up a book and start reading it written by one of these authors, I think you would be surprised to see that although they affirm homosexuality, they actually agree with a lot of the other traditional Christian sexual ethics, meaning they would be proponents of saving sex for marriage, you know, virginity, faithful monogamous unions. They would be proponents for all of those things. And I think that really surprises people, because there's this sort of caricature in our mind that, you know, once you approve of homosexuality, then you would approve of all promiscuity. And that's actually not the case. And so I did want to include in this episode kind of a helpful synopsis of what side A believes, because, you know, we don't want to mischaracterize people that we disagree with. And so although we are not affirming as a ministry, we do not believe that God blesses homosexual sex. We still need to understand where people that we're disagreeing are coming from and not mischaracterize them. So that's something helpful to keep in mind as we talk through this episode about side A. And then the other three sides, side B, Y, and X, they are all not affirming. But where they differ is really on the label, the orientation of being gay. Like, how big of a role does that have in your identity? Because at the end of the day, they would say you cannot act on your homosexual desires. But side B would say, be who you are. Like, your identity, you can still use the labels of gay or lesbian. Because if that is authentic to your experience, then that is who you are. You don't just lie and say, you know, no, I don't struggle with these things. Like it's still part of your orientation and the way you interact with the world, and it might never change. And some of the authors that are proponents of still using the label of gay would be Greg Cole, in his book Single Gay Christian, Wesley Hill, Preston Sprinkle even argues that you can use the terms to identify your experiences. And this is, again, the major difference between side B and, say, you know, side Y, because side Y would say, do not identify yourself with something that, if acted upon, is a sin. Drop all the labels. Why, side Y, why identify yourself with a label? Instead, they would use the term same-sex attracted to describe the struggle with sin, the struggle with temptation, but they don't want to use any identifiers. And that would be people like Sam Elbury, Kevin DeYoung, Christopher Wan, and even Jackie Hill Perry in her book, Gay Girl, Good God, says how she dropped the labels. However, it's interesting because Jackie Hill Perry has never said other people can't use the labels. And she might even, you know, agree, I think in some of her interviews and things. I don't want to like misquote her, but I think she definitely gives the freedom for other people to like determine where God is convicting them in their walk, whether or not to use the labels. And I think Lori Krieg, who spoke at our youth conference last year, would kind of be similar to that. Or maybe she would be side B, actually. We should have her on an interview and ask her which of the two sides she would fall into. And then lastly, there's side X. And how is side X different? Well, they definitely wouldn't use the term gay. In fact, they would say they are X gay, because not only do they not use the label or the identifier, but they think you need to surrender and be cured from. You don't only have to surrender your same-sex desires, you have to be cured from them. And so there's a big emphasis with side X on conversion therapy. There's a big emphasis on heterosexuality being God's best and being the cure to homosexuality. And that's where, you know, we as a ministry would caution anyone from leaning into side X, because it can really make heterosexuality the cure that it was never intended to be. Holy sexuality is what God desires, regardless of your sin struggles. So as a ministry, we would align ourselves more with side B and side Y. Okay, so that's the overview. And maybe we should repeat it one more time.
No, I think everyone's got it.
Okay, they've got it. Side A, side B, side X, and side Y. I said it wrong.
You said it out of order. Now you're going to confuse people.
So side A, side B, side Y, and side X. Why did I do X? I should have done X, Y, because
of the way that they did it.
Because of the alphabet.
Well, yeah, but you sort of went from like most accepting to like
least accepting.
To like
to least affirming. Most least, affirming to least
yes,
affirming.
Yes. That's, well, I understand why you put
thank
it that
you.
Way.
Thank you. Okay, so now what we want to do with the rest of this episode is look at these four views and the way that they would answer a series of questions.
Yeah, kind of some of the most common, most popular questions that Christians wonder and ask, research, or seeking answers to in regards to same-sex attraction.
So let's just start off with this one. Is sexual attraction to the same sex in and of itself a sin? And I think as a ministry, we would say that sin begins when we sinfully act on our attractions, right?
Yeah.
So whether that's by actively having sex outside of the marriage covenant,
or in your mind,
or yeah, looking at someone lustfully,
as well. Lust.
Yep. And deciding to let those thoughts linger, not taking your thoughts captive, watching pornography. These are all actions and decisions where a sinful attraction turns into a sinful action.
Ooh, that was good.
And so sin, thank you, sinful attraction turns into a sinful action. And that is where it becomes a sin.
Yep.
Not
the temptation in and of itself.
Right.
Is not the sin.
It's and
when you act on it.
One of the things you share at our youth conference every year is that passage in James 1.
Yes.
Verses 14 to 15.
Where which it says, but each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. So each person has their own ways, their own inclinations to ways in which they are going to be tempted. And it's important that we understand our own sin struggles, you know, our own temptation struggles, maybe I should even say, or put it that way. Because the more that you dwell on them, as this passage says, you know, you can be dragged away by them. They can drag you away and then entice you into sin. But that temptation in and of itself is not the same as sin.
No. And Hebrews 4:15 says that Jesus was tempted in every way according to our likeness, but was without sin. So temptation is not automatically sin. Christ himself experienced all sorts of temptation,
yep.
But he did not act on it. And so you might be wondering, okay, which sides would agree with this stance that we have as a ministry? Both side B and side Y. Both side B and side Y would say that the sin is in the action, not the attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Side A, which is affirming, would obviously say, oh, there's nothing wrong with it at all. And then side X would say it's all sin. Even the temptation is a sin. You need to be completely converted and delivered in order for it not to be a sin. But where our ministry stands is with B and Y on this particular question. Let's read a couple quotes from some authors on this topic. Sam Albury in his book says, otherwise you're saying to somebody, even if you're not sinning, you're still sinning. Just because you've got the capacity to be tempted in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. So if you are equating temptation with sin, saying that temptation is sin, then even if somebody is not, you know, sinning in their heart or sinning in action, it's like telling them, like, okay, you're not doing anything. You're not like actually doing anything wrong, but you are still sinning because temptation is sin.
Mm.
And that's nonsense.
Yeah.
The Bible doesn't say that.
Right.
So why would we say that?
Right. Temptation. Well, and we know that from the Hebrews verse, that temptation in and of itself can't be a sin because Christ himself was tempted, but he didn't act on it. So the question we need to be asking as Christians is, at what point does the attraction become an action? And again, as a ministry, we would say it's when you allow lust to fill your heart and mind, or mm-hmm. when you act on it sexually in some way, view pornography. Those type of actions are when the attraction becomes a sin. Now, the difference, I think, between side Y and side B on this is that side Y would really emphasize that homosexuality, even when you're experiencing the attraction or the temptation, it isn't a properly ordered desire. Meaning it in and of itself never leads to that which God intended. And so it has to be reined in. It has to be stopped. It has to be held under contention, under control.
You have to be very disciplined.
You have to be disciplined. Exactly. Whereas heterosexuality, also, you have to be controlled. You have to be disciplined. You have to be faithful. But it can be properly ordered. It can lead to the fulfillment of that which God blesses. It can lead to that which God has intended
mm-hmm.
in a faithful covenant of marriage and the love between a husband and a wife. And so that's where side B and side Y, there'd be like a little bit of nuance there.
Mm-hmm.
Because side Y would give that additional clarification that even if you're not acting on the attraction, there's still something about the attraction that isn't properly ordered. It might not be sin, but it has been touched by the fallen disorder of our world.
Mm-hmm.
And side B would say, well, that's not necessarily true because homosexual desires will lead you into a life of vocational celibacy,
mm-hmm.
and purposeful singleness that otherwise you might not experience. And so it can be surrendered to God in a way that it actually leads to a better life than the distractions of marriage. Mm. And they would refer to the verses in Paul,
mm-hmm.
Or the verses that Paul writes in his letter to, what letter is it? When Paul talks about how it's more blessed to be single.
I feel like it's one of the Corinthians.
Yeah, that would make sense because there's a lot of sexual immorality in those letters. So they would emphasize where homosexual attractions, when held under and surrendered to the Lordship of Christ, how that can actually lead to fulfilling a vocational celibacy, a fulfilled life of singleness. And they are very quick to emphasize the importance of deep, non-sexual, intimate friendships.
Mm.
More than any of the other sides.
Mm.
Because they would say that there is a unique experience with celibate Christians, single Christians, to find that deep intimacy, that we're all created for intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
We might not have sex. We
want to know and be known.
But we want to know and be known. Yada, yada. And so that's where side B and side Y would have a little bit of that nuance with this question. Okay, next question. Did God make me this way? What is our position as a ministry, Amber? What are some of our thoughts on that? And then I can kind of talk about the sides.
Well, there's definitely a difference between saying, you know, God made me this way, and recognizing that we've all been born into a fallen world. Mm. And because we've been born into a fallen world, all of us experience bent desires in some way.
Yeah. Isn't that true?
And one of those ways would be same-sex attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's important to recognize that we all are the same in that way, that we all have been touched by,
yeah,
by sin and by the fallenness and brokenness of this world. And it's not our genetics,
right,
or the way that we were born that determines what is good,
mm,
and what is bad.
Yeah.
So you know, what is sin and what is righteous?
Mm-hmm.
God's the one who determines that. And he has given us his word in order to help us order our otherwise disordered lives.
Right.
And to bring clarity to our lives and to our human experience, really. And regardless of the way in which we are born, we have to submit ourselves to that.
Mm. Yeah. And I like how you brought up the commonality of humanity in that regard. And so it becomes less of a question of, did God make me this way? And more of the reality that I was born into sin. Rather than trying to blame God for our struggles, we go to God for the redemption.
We go to
make things right.
Yes, we go to him for the answers as to what do I do with this struggle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And regardless of your struggle, I mean, this episode we're talking about LGB, same-sex attraction, but regardless of your struggle,
we all have something to submit.
We all have something to submit to the Lordship of Christ. Absolutely. And so where the sides fall, well, side A, I think I said it when I was explaining their position, they would obviously say, God made me this way. He wanted me to be this way and to experience queerness and to live in it. And it's therefore blessed by him. So they essentially blame or not blame, they would credit God for their way of viewing sexuality. And side X would say, absolutely not. God would never, you know, make someone that way. And then I think B and Y would be more aligned with where we stand as ministry.
Mm-hmm.
That regardless of if there is some genetic component, we know that there are many genetic components to
heart disease, yeah, alcoholism,
the fallenness of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not to blame God. You still have the same responsibility for how you act on your predisposed nature.
Yep.
Okay, next question. Can and should a person with same-sex attraction pursue changing their attractions through therapy or interventions? And with this, I'm thinking about conversion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, side X would be very big advocates for that. While both sides...
Side A would not.
Yeah, side A would not. They would say, why would you ever want to change? Side B and Y would say, deliverance isn't the goal, obedience is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think side B actually does the best job at communicating this truth. That deliverance isn't the goal, obedience is. Despite your struggle to be obedient to God and what his word says. And to live in a traditional, biblical sexual ethic. Christopher Wan said in an article in the issue, sanctification is not getting rid of our temptations, but pursuing holiness in the midst of them. If our goal is making people straight, then we're practicing a false gospel.
Mm.
And that is
good.
I would say if you summarize Christopher Wan's work, and he's side Y, it's that concept that the antidote to homosexuality isn't heterosexuality, it's holy sexuality.
Mm.
And I think as a ministry, where would we fall? Again, we would align ourselves with side B and Y. Absolutely, you can pray for deliverance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would you not?
Yeah.
If you're struggling with anything that isn't aligned with what God commands in his word, why would you not ask to be delivered from that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, pray for it. It happens, but again, it's not the goal. Now, Stanton Jones and Mark Yarhouse did do a study that revealed only about 18% of people successfully can change their sexual attraction through conversion therapy. And then after that study was published, there were multiple people that had originally claimed that they had experienced a change in their attractions that they later renounced those claims. And so, it can happen,
mm-hmm.
but it is not the goal. And it is certainly not a guaranteed promise by God.
Yeah.
And it should not be. It's a very narrowly focused goal. Like you're focusing on the wrong
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yep. It's,
the cure to homosexuality is not heterosexuality.
It's holy sexuality.
It's holy sexuality. And we love that phrase. And again, that's kind of a side why saying. Can people with same-sex attractions identify as LGBT while being Christian? And this is...
Where B and Y really diverge.
Yep. Yeah. So we've been saying up to this point, oh, that's a Y and B. They both believe that. This is where they're going to disagree greatly. And I think you'd even see in our ministry,
mm-hmm.
Some of our team members might lean a little bit more one side than the other.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole, I think our ministry is more closely aligned with side Y, not allowing a title of gay, bi, lesbian to define who you are, to become your identity, to lay those things down to the Lordship of Christ. And yet, we are very sensitive to learning from side B Christians that there are real, like, reasons that you would use those labels.
Mm-hmm. I think the why is important. I think the why, like, for me personally, the why is important, like, and not the side why, but like, why are you using,
oh yes, thank you,
why are you using that label? I realized that after I went, the why is important, the why is important, why are you using that,
like, we talked about Greg Cole,
yes, being like missional. You're using it to be missional. Okay, that's great. That's a really powerful answer. I also think that it's possible that someone uses the label sometimes as a way to, like, remind them of what they have to be on alert for. Hmm. Like, they use the label in order to remind them, this is my sin struggle that I need to be diligent about.
Yeah.
Like, an alcoholic, not that I want to compare same-sex attraction to alcohol, but you know, an alcoholic, a lot of times it will take a very long time for them to not refer to themselves as an alcoholic.
Right.
And it's not,
which
because...
is interesting you bring that up, because I think side Y often says, well, an alcoholic Christian wouldn't say, well, I'm an alcoholic Christian.
But a lot of people who are recovering alcoholics will continue to call themselves alcoholic.
They go to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Well, yeah. In order to continue to remind themselves of that struggle, that propensity that they have if they don't keep their guard up. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there also is a sensitivity that we need to have, even if we might not like the idea of somebody using a sin struggle label on themselves. Like, we need to ask, why are you using it, and really come alongside and support them in a way that they need to be supported.
Yeah.
It's kind of where I fall. I would probably be one of the people that leans a little bit into the B.
More side B. And I want to learn and listen from side B. I think I would be more side Y. And I think everything that we publish as a ministry would be, but yet I am still learning and I'm listening to those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to actually read some quotes from both sides. Sam Elbury explains the reason for not using labels, but instead using the term same sex attracted to describe his struggle. And again, he's side Y. He said, I want to use language that can describe an aspect of what is going on in my life, but which doesn't imply that that is what defines me or what is the center and heart of who I am. The language of same-sex attraction, perhaps, is less familiar to people outside of Christian circles. It's a bit more clunky, but I think it's less prone to being misunderstood. I use it because I don't want to imply that a particular set of sexual temptations is where I see who I am. It's not the lens through which I understand myself. That's why I tend to use the language of being same-sex attracted. So that's from a side Y. And then for side B, there's really two main reasons that Christians would advocate for using terms like gay or lesbian. I think the first is because terminology like same-sex attracted can be a bit clunky. Like Sam Elbury said, people outside the church don't understand that language. Mm-hmm. And therefore terms like gay and lesbian become... a little bit more...
They become bridges.
Missional. Yeah, they become missional. And then the second reason is that side B believers would also say that the LGBTQ plus identity is not about affirming same-sex marriage or same-sex activity. It's a cultural identity that you share. And it's a shared experience with other people. And so kind of reclaiming the language to be more about your shared human experience and less about like, oh, you're gay, so you're having gay sex.
Mm.
Like, oh, you're lesbian, so that means you're sleeping with women. Like, separate the sexual activity from the label is what side B would advocate for. A couple of quotes. Johanna Finnegan shares in... a message that she gave. And again, these quotes I'm gathering from a blog produced by Side B Podcast. She writes, if you tell a non-Christian, I struggle with same-sex attraction, they will look at you with a dead stare. The phrase has no significance outside the walls of the church.
Mm.
Bridge Eileen explains on the website, let's imagine telling an unbeliever, I'm not gay. I'm same-sex attracted. The obvious question is, well, what do you mean? When translated, you literally just said, I'm not attracted to the same sex. I'm attracted to the same sex. That's like me saying to a friend, I'm not a woman. I'm just a woman. Congratulations to me on sounding both pretentious and crazy at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I get where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Language matters. And when you're trying to communicate your reality, that is a big burden.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, listening and learning. It'd be like saying, you know, I'm American Indian. Like, okay, does that mean you believe in natural spiritism associated with the heritage? Or is it just a true statement about you?
Mm-hmm.
That you're American Indian. You relate to the experiences of being an American Indian, but it doesn't mean that you believe everything from the heritage and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what side B Christians are understanding, that maybe
advocating.
Yeah, they're advocating is that you don't have to endorse everything that gay people do to say that you are gay.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if you were an African-American or an American Indian, like to say you're that thing, that's part of your ethnicity doesn't mean you endorse everything about your people group.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly true. Being a white colonial, actually, I'm not a white colonist. I'm a white.
Are you trying to think of the labels that would be?
Yeah. What people would say that I am. Because I'm technically an immigrant of third generation, so I wasn't a colonist.
You weren't a colonizer.
A colonizer. No. But point being, I am white, and I don't, you know, approve of everything that my ancestors did either. So we have labels that do define us without approving of everything about the baggage that label carries. Next question.
What should be the goal for a Christian with same-sex attractions?
Ooh, that's a good one. I honestly think this question is what should drive so much of the conversation.
Mm.
Because if we're asking what is our goal as a Christian, we should all be able to answer to glorify God.
Yeah.
And to glorify God in this body that he's given us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I can come down on side A and say, the perspective they're promoting is not about glorifying God.
Mm.
It's about pursuing what they believe is their God-given desires.
Mm.
But ultimately, about pursuing their desires. About pursuing their happiness.
Mm. Yeah.
While side B, side Y, and even side X is birthed from a true desire to glorify God and live in alignment with his word and what he is calling us to do. To live in obedience and surrender to the lordship, his lordship of our lives. I think side X is focusing on the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that. I think that they've slapped a false idol on what they think it means to honor God.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they've just made it very narrow.
Yeah.
What honoring God actually looks like.
Yes, thank
and
you.
Conversion has to be a part of that.
While side B and Y, what I think come closest to saying that glorifying God is the point of our Christian lives and the point of the goal for a Christian with same-sex attractions. You'd hear side Y say things like, your identity is only in Christ. The opposite of homosexuality isn't heterosexuality, it's holiness, and that the goal is to live holy lives. Christopher Wan said, heterosexuality is never mentioned in scripture. You will never find that word in the Bible. So what is biblical sexuality? Biblical sexuality is holy sexuality. Every person, heterosexual or homosexual, is called to live holy. And I think a way that we see gay Christians inside B living this out is by really promoting chaste singleness. And being careful, I think that we've seen the language around celibacy be a little more careful than it used to be, because they want to leave themselves open to the possibility of God calling you to marriage, like Jackie Hill Perry or like Lori Craig.
Yeah.
Is it Craig or Krieg?
I don't know.
I keep saying it wrong, I think. I'm sorry, Lori. Forgive me. I think it's Krieg.
I should know because I listened to her last year, but
yeah. I know. I think it's Krieg. I practiced it before we had to introduce her because I didn't want to do it wrong. And now I'm on a podcast saying her name wrong. If she takes the time to listen to my podcast, I'm just going to be super grateful. So then we can privately inbox me, Lori, and tell me that I pronounced her name wrong and say, you owe me a apology. And I will apologize to you. Because I'll just be super happy you listened to our podcast. So I think last two questions here. Is sexual intercourse within marriage between two people of the same sex blessed by God? Bottom line.
No.
No. The only side that would say it is would be side A. But side Y Christians, side X and side B, would all say that God does not bless or approve of sexual relationships between people of the same sex, regardless of if they're married or not. In fact, we would say that it is not marriage. A same-sex union isn't actually marriage at all.
Mm.
Because marriage...
It's between a man and a woman.
Well, and it can only occur by God bringing two people together.
Mm-hmm.
And so same-sex unions are a... contractual agreement, a legal agreement,
yeah,
but they are not a blessed union by God, and therefore it actually is not marriage. So it is rare that you'll actually hear me use the term same-sex marriage, because I don't think that exists. So how do we refute homosexual marriage then? How do we say, like, homosexual marriage, like I just said, doesn't exist? How do we refute it? And I think Preston Sprinkle makes a really good point on this.
Yeah, well, I think first you have to define what marriage actually is.
Mm-hmm.
What does the Bible actually say marriage is? And then you need to look at what the Bible has to say about homosexuality. And how does the Bible talk about homosexuality? What does it have to say on it? And a lot of people are surprised by how little the Bible actually does talk about homosexuality. I think we're under this impression that it's talked about a lot, but there's actually only 6 verses in the Bible that talk about homosexuality. Not that there has to be a ton to make something, you know, right or wrong. But there's 3 verses in the Old Testament, 3 verses in the New Testament, which is actually really powerful because we're seeing homosexuality talked about in both the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. So it's not like it's just talked about in the Old Testament and condemned, or it's just talked about in the New Testament and condemned, but it's actually talked about in both. One verse, though, that most Christians can agree on when talking about homosexuality, that we don't really use it to apply to what we're talking about here, which is, you know, a monogamous, respectful relationship between two people of the same sex, that side A would be, you know, would be arguing for, is the Sodom and Gomorrah passage. So the Sodom and Gomorrah passage, even though it is homosexual activity that is being, you know, displayed, or as the men of the city are calling out after the...
Yeah, but it's also, it's gang rape.
But it's gang rape. Yes. So it's like, there's homosexual activity there, but it's gang rape. So you can't, it's not a great verse to use in the homosexual debate, because there's so many other things going on that are wrong.
Yeah. And side A would also condemn Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes.
Like, everybody, whether you're affirming or non-affirming, would condemn what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
Because, again, there's other things happening in the passage. And so Preston Sprinkle argues in his book, like, let's move away from
Genesis 19.
Jumping to Genesis 19 as our first line of defense. Let's, like you said, Amber.
What was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah? Yeah. And that's, you know, why it burned. And it definitely, the sexual immorality is talked about in other parts of the Bible. Yeah. It is a contributing factor to what, you know, was Sodom and Gomorrah's evil. But that verse, to point it out and make it as a crutch in your argument, there's other things that are going on there that are
And it's more important wrong. That we look at, like you said, what marriage is. What's the point of marriage?
And the other five verses. The other five verses, which really are appealing to God's created order. They're really appealing to a theology of the body. Surprise, surprise, we're going to bring that in. And so how does the theology of the body apply to same-sex attraction?
Whether it's monogamous and, you know, between faithful, loving couples or not.
Yep.
This applies across the board.
Yep.
To what God's trying to accomplish in our bodies.
So what it's, you know, it's really downplaying that bodily identity, or I should say the biological identity as male or female. And it's looking at, you know, our desires and defining them as, you know, more representative of our true self. Because at the end of the day, the reality is that the male body and the female body were designed by God in a specific way for each other. They together procreate. And sexually, they are designed for one another. And so to deny that is really downplaying God's created order in your body. And to reject that. To reject that bodily reality. And so recognizing that, you know, to have a desire that is in conflict with your bodily reality, in and of itself, that's not sin. We touched on this earlier, but to act on that desire is sin. And that's the other interesting thing about the verses that talk about homosexuality, is that they are very specific in condemning the act of homosexual sex. Okay, they're not actually condemning the individual, the person. They're condemning the action of homosexual sex. And so I would say that out of the verses, Romans 1, 26 through 27 is the clearest statement the Bible makes on homosexuality. So I'm going to read that and then I'll comment on why it's the clearest. It says, "For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for that which is contrary to nature. And likewise, the men too abandoned natural relations with women and burned in their desire toward one another. Males with males committing shameful acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error." So let's unpack that for just a minute. So it's talking about both male and female homosexual sex.
Yeah,
so
women don't get
really,
off the
really
hook.
Yeah, that's really powerful.
Because other people will say from other packages, it is like, oh, arsenicoitai, that's male bedding another male. Or passages in Leviticus, that's about male sex. And so this passage, like you said, it's about men and women having sex.
Yeah, so the fact that it calls both of them out and said that the sex is not natural. He doesn't call the people unnatural. Rather, the action is unnatural. And when it says unnatural, it doesn't mean like, oh, because sometimes we'll say like, well, that's unnatural. And we kind of have this connotation that it's like weird. Yeah, like, that's unnatural. But it really, in this context, it just means it's against nature. It's against the created order. It's not natural. It's not the way that God created it to be. And it also is consensual. It says they burned with sexual desire for each other. They suffered in their bodies for all the wrong things they did. It's talking about a mutual sexual relation. It's not talking about an abusive relationship. It's talking about a consensual act.
So, but that's a really important point to bring up when you're talking about the monogamous consensual relationships of today, because one of the arguments that you'll often hear is like, oh, the biblical verses about homosexuality were just against abusive,
like men with young boys
with pederasty.
Because it was popular in the culture at the time.
And so that was all that Paul was talking about. That's all Leviticus was talking about, was this power dynamic. And that's not this verse. And it's not the verses in 1 Corinthians or 1 Timothy either that use the word arsenikoitai, which means a man who beds another man. It literally means male bed. Mm-hmm. And it's referring back to the language of Leviticus where those terms are used. Paul's like creating his own word to express homosexual behavior across the board, not just a power dynamic. And why? Well, because there's a Greek word, pederasty, that he could have used.
And he didn't.
If he wanted to refer to just a abusive power dynamic. He didn't use that. He used a broad term.
Oh, interesting.
Of men bedding other men. Yeah. So that would be men bedding other men when they're married, men bedding other men outside of marriage, men bedding other men who are older than them, younger than them. And that's the word that's used in 1 Timothy. And so we know that it has a very broad application against all homosexual behavior. However, those two verses do specifically say male. And this one also says
women.
Female. Yeah. So women, this one is, like you said, the clearest verse. Because it combines all of those truths in one passage.
Yep.
And we're far from experts on this. I mean, 10 years ago, when we were first talking about purity, saving sex for marriage, healthy relationships, never in a million years.
Yeah.
Would I have thought that I was going to have a podcast episode on LGBTQIA+.
No. We were talking about eating disorders and beauty and confidence.
And having, you know, healthy relationships with
guys.
But
these are important. These are relevant to our time, and they're important conversations to have. And I think they're important to talk about, even if you don't consider yourself to be an expert.
Right. Yeah.
But to try to be educated.
Yeah.
And there is truth in the Bible in regards to these things, and truth when it's spoken has power.
Amen.
It has power to set people free. Mm-hmm. It has power to break them out of the bondage of lies.
Yeah.
And lies that the culture, Satan, you know, wants people to stay trapped in. And so I think we just are really convicted on that point that, you know, we need to speak truth.
Right.
And we need to speak God's truth, most importantly.
Yeah.
And hope that it can help set some people free or help bring some clarity to
the confusion
that they may be experiencing. And even, you know, to our listeners who might not be experiencing same-sex attraction, but maybe some clarity in looking into the lives of people that you know.
Mm-hmm. And also some clarity on your own convictions, like where you fall on the sides. Because again, I don't really like the term sides because it's not like you're taking a side, but it is good to categorize your own convictions so that we are not contradicting yourself with what you believe. And we by no means think that we're the last word on the subject.
No.
God is the final word on the subject.
Yes.
And so we want to be devoted to continually exploring his word, learning from his word. And there are people who have gone before us that have ministries that really are just about this topic. This is one of the many things that we talk about at Across My Heart. Sexuality is just one of the things we talk about with Across My Heart Ministries. And within the Yada Yada podcast, which is about sex and sexuality, this has only been, you know, one or two episodes where we've talked about LGBTQIA topics, because it's just one of the many struggles within sexuality.
Yeah, one of the ways in which people experience brokenness.
Yeah, and so it is by no means, like we said, we don't think we're experts on this, but we're excited to share what we've
been learning.
Yeah. And what we believe. And we're going to include in the podcast notes some links to some of our favorite ministries that we think do a really good job leading this conversation. Some of them that we mentioned in this podcast, some of the names you'll be familiar with from listening to this episode. So check out those links below, and also follow our new channel on Instagram called Pursue Ethics. Our youth conference, which we also mentioned a couple times in this episode, will be returning this November in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And that youth conference is specifically devoted to helping the next generation develop a healthy biblical sexual ethic.
Yeah.
And at that conference, we answer questions that are submitted anonymously from the youth in attendance. Last year, we had over 100 questions submitted. So we started an Instagram channel just to start answering those questions online to, again, be that voice of truth amidst all the lies in our culture, to be a light in the darkness. And so give us a follow if you like these types of conversations and you even want some more answers to questions on LGBTQIA, because there were a lot that were submitted at the conference last year. And with that, we're looking forward to next week. Next week's episode is on premarital sex.
We're not shying away from any of the major hard-hitting topics this season, are we?
Nope. Premarital sex and the theology of the body next week. Until then,
no.
And be numb.